Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 397, April 10th, 2019. A Miko AC1 on AM, and we learn all about Contest University. Hello, everybody. I'm K9EID, Bob Heil, and I'm in Pleasant Hope, well, outside of Pleasant Hope, Missouri, out in the country, north of Springfield. And we have, a very powerful show tonight. There's so much going on. So you want to pay attention, and you might learn something, that's for sure, because we have people that will teach you a lot of things. Let's see who all is here. First of all, let's go around the horn. Gordo in Southern Cal, how are you doing, Gordo? You and Sue's doing all right?
All is well here in Southern California. This week in Cuyahoga Falls Amateur Radio Club, 65 years doing a ham fest. They got a great one this Saturday, the 13th. Go to cfarc.org for details. Thanks, Jim, for that one. And in Amanda's country, they've got a school taking part in the Amateur Radio International Space Station on Monday, 11:15. Now, while you won't hear the school side of the contact because they're on an alternate undisclosed frequency, you will hear the space shuttle if you're up in the mountains somewhere, well, Colorado mountains, 145-800, about 11:15 Mountain Time. And finally, I've been told that this out-of-the-world ARISS auction for the Kenwood 890, as well as for the ARRL handbook set, all autographed by appropriate astronauts, is still available. The auction, sort of like a contest, going on until early Sunday morning. So this weekend, log on to ARISS.com and see how you can support those kids on Monday that are listening to the International Space Station live and direct. Bob?
All right. Good stuff. We'll be back to you in just a minute. I know you have a guest with you, too, so we'll get back to you. First of all, Don, how's Don Wilbanks? You doing okay?
I am. I'm doing great. It was a warm day down in New Orleans today. I actually saw 87 or 88 degrees on the outside temperature meter on the car as I was driving home. Just a gorgeous day. This is about perfect. In another couple of months, we're going to be hating life because it'll be close to 100 with 80% humidity. But today was absolutely gorgeous. Great night to listen to WTWW at 5085 and 15.810 because you'll hear us. You'll hear the audio from Ham Nation tonight. We appreciate the WTWW folks. If you've got some ham radio related news that you'd like to share with them, they'll tell the world about it. Literally, email at WTWW.us is the email address. Very simple. Email at WTWW.us, and they love signal reports. And we've got Newsline tonight. We've got Dr. T with the solar update to see why you may not be able to be making really good contacts right now, and a whole lot more, Bob.
Okay. Well, one of the reasons that you'll make good contacts is you probably will have an ICOM radio and an antenna and coax from DX Engineering. How do I know that? Because those two guys are with us. How are you doing? And they're in the studio. Look at that. How you doing, Ray and Tim?
Doing good here, Bob.
Yeah, doing really good, Bob. It's great to be back in Northern California, and we're excited about the show here tonight.
Yeah, all right. We'll be back.
They even rolled out the TWiT carpet for us.
Okay. We'll be back to you because I know you got lots of information. And George will be here. Amanda will be here. So lots of stuff going on. But before we get on to that, I got a little bit of news for you. I was at Branson, Missouri this weekend. They hold a QRP convention there every year. It's a four-state QRP group. It grows every year. And we'll run through these slides. It was the biggest crowd they've ever had. And they build gear. There were 48 of the guys set up with soldering irons and all kinds of tools to build a transmitter, a 40-meter CW QRP transmitter. And they had to do it in like 4 hours or so. This is just one of the rooms. And look who I find when I start taking pictures. There's Joe, the king of building QRP rigs. He was there. And I really appreciate what you were doing there with your neighbor beside you. He helped get our great guest, look at that, NV5F. There is our queen from the chat room, and her little buddy was with her, and she was building the transmitter. And I'm happy to tell you that Virginia built it, and when it was tested, it worked right off the bat. In fact, all of them worked except one, and it was some little stupid thing that wasn't quite right, and fixed it in a second, and it was going. So all of them worked. I was so happy. And I think the next slide shows the transmitter. That was the first guy that had it built, and he was just he had just had it tested, and it worked really good. An interesting thing about this rig, the close-up of it will show us, it didn't have any coils. The coils were in the printed circuit. How about that? That is really cool technology, and that was done by NM0S, David Kripe. He is an amazing guy. We're going to have him on the show. He has all kinds of things like this that he can help us with building and so on. But I was amazed. There were no coils. They were in the printed circuit board. So that was our little week end in Branson. And there is Virginia with showing her board, and it all worked great. I'm really proud of her because, she hasn't been building a lot of things, but she did build the pine board, and she inspected it here. She was making sure my work was okay. Got out the chipstick, and oh golly, we had fun, let me tell you. And so many people there were Ham Nation viewers. And several had built the pine board, so we're getting the word out to a lot of people, and we appreciate the all of the guys in Branson having us down and making a great weekend of it. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I told you about this little deal, the old 1950, I think it was around 55, the Amoco CW transmitter is back on the market, and I wanted to do something, and I did. I took out my Greenlee punches, and I punched a hole in the back. So I made a little video, because I have a lot of you ask me, what is a Greenlee punch? How does it work? What do you do with it? So let's roll it, and here you are, how to put the Amoco on AM. What fun this was.
Well, here's the finished product, the AC1 CW transmitter, the Amoco kit. It was really fun to build, and very, very nice parts and construction of all the parts, and the chassis was great. They did a wonderful job. But I paired it with one of our Ico 730 modulators. I had a spare one here. I use it on my AM stations. So I thought we'd put this little baby on AM. It only took two wires to do it and a ground. But what I did is I took my Greenlee punches and we punched a little hole in the back to put an 8-pin socket in it. And We connected that cable to the output of the modulator, and it works great. So let's investigate a little more about how the Greenleys work. They have a bolt. You drill a pilot hole for that, and that will go on one side of the chassis. This will go inside. Oh, wrong way. And as we tighten that bolt, it's going to cut a nice hole in the steel. Greenlee punches are great. Takes a lot of force to do that, but works well. So let's get the chassis down here and make our hole. What we're doing is we're making a hole to mount this socket so we can put a modulator into the AC1. Got the wrench all attached here. Got him inside, ready to go. And all we got to do is start moving with the old imp wrench, and away she goes. Takes a little pressure to get it going, but once she's going, she'll start cutting, and it'll cut through. And bingo, we're going to be there just a couple of minutes. Take a look inside. And as she pulls through, you can see the threads. Aha, got the last one. Come on here, dude, felt it. There, come on, there she went. And we have successfully put a nice hole in the back of the little AC1, and guess what fits? I hope. There we go. We'll mount our mounting ring on the back, and we'll be ready to mount the modulator. Well, to wire the modulator. So there you have the history of my Greenleys and how they work. While at it, I'll show you one of the most important jobs. You have to clean this out. So you take that loose and you go in here and you find the little piece of metal that you cut. Look at that. Be sure you take that, throw it away, because if you don't, the next time you use it, you don't have to go in and clean it out. Sometimes it's kind of hard to get those out of there, but this one came out very easy. But look how thick that metal is. That's pretty super. So there we have the complete story of the Greenlee punch. And the other thing I did is instead of using a key, because it's for AM now, I use one of our push-to-talk switches to key the radio, or to key the transmitter. So we got the transmitter all keyed up with that, and it works really good. I'm very happy. And it was pretty simple. Two wires in the ground, that's all we needed to come out of. We just split the B-plus wire of the final amplifier in the AC1, put it in series with the modulation transformer, and we're ready to ride. Let's take a listen, see how good it is.
Amico CW transmitter on AM. Very, very cool. Can't wait to get it on the air and make some contacts.
All right, there we go. You could do that with any kind of CW transmitter. It's very easy. The modulator is the key, and I think maybe that's might be one of the next things we do is to build a modulator. All it is a hi-fi amp with the right transformer instead of a transformer to match an 8-ohm speaker to match about a 2,000-ohm load that goes into the B-plus line. It's very simple, but it works well, I must say. I'm very excited about it, and who knows where it's going to go from here, because the guys at Amico now, they're gonna be doing something about this, I'm sure, so we'll have other products from them. We're very excited. So there you have it. I wanted to do all of that for you tonight, and it worked well. And any questions, send me an email, and we'll get you in touch with the guys at Amico. And look on the internet. They've got a really nice website. And I'll tell you what else they have.
Look at this.
They have parts. In fact, I just bought this transformer from them, and it's really good. I needed a little bit smaller transformer, and
It's just what I need, 300 to center tap to 600, 300 each side, and a 6-volt filament. And they have all kinds of parts you can buy from them. So it's another source for parts for you guys that are building. And girls, because, boy, Virginia's right in the middle of it, as well as several others. So that's our story from here. Gordo, I know you've got some other end of the coax, so to speak, ideas on antennas. So let's go back to California and see what's going on.
Well, thanks, Bob. And I have an expert on the other end of the coax, Carl, Kilo Bravo 7 Alpha Zulu. Hi, Carl. Welcome aboard. And we so much appreciate all your help tonight in describing hidden antennas. Go ahead, Carl.
Okay. Thanks, Gordo. And a while back, I was living, I'm not anymore, but I was in an area where there was antenna restricted. So I came up with a few of my own and then put together this little presentation that I give at local ham fest and stuff, and they seem to like it. So, okay. Well, I lived, this guy lived in the same subdivision. One of the ways of doing it is to come up with an invisible antenna. Use very thin wire. This use Wireman product 534. It's a 26 gauge wire, and it's really good for making antennas. You can't even see this. I rode around my bicycle looking for his antenna and finally found it. Nobody else found it either because he was in the same HOA. The only thing you have to watch there at the lower frequencies, you've got the skin depth problem. This is copper clad steel, and if you go too low in frequency, you'll get the RF riding into the steel core instead of on the copper, which is on the outside. So some of these antennas are not suitable for 80 and 160. This is another cool idea. Depending on your house configuration, if you have an attic, you can put that in. Under eave inverted V or something in the attic. You can take advantage of that. And dryer vent. This makes a really, really neat antenna because it's very big, big in diameter, and it's fairly easy to tune. You just have to make sure that you use an anti-oxidizing paste on there when you attach your wires to it. But you run the Dacron cord through the middle of it and then hang it from the ceiling.
And great idea. And, of course, don't step in between the big beams in the roof, right, Carl?
Right. Yeah, that would be enough to ruin your whole day, I think. This is my roof at the other house, and I had a whole bunch of antennas on there, and nobody ever found them. Some of the things were painted. They're sky blue from about 4 feet up. And so they were not all that noticeable. As you can see, I had a variety of antennas. I think I had 11 or 12 antennas on the roof, on that flat roof. Another way of hiding antennas is camouflage. So this camouflage paint, which is made by both Krylon and Rust-Oleum, has very low reflectivity. And so it doesn't glint. And works really well. And you can see the picture in there. If you look in the background, you can see all the colors on those paint appear in the background. So you can paint something, an antenna, to match your surroundings. That works pretty well. In fact, at my other house, here's an antenna I had. I had green paint on the bottom of this 20-meter vertical and blue paint on the top. And the top of it is actually one of those 108-inch whips. But you can see how I made the bottom there with the radials in that round electrical box. And I put it up about 18 inches, and it worked great. Another way to do it's camouflage using fake foliage. You can buy those branches at Michael's or Hobby Lobby or someplace. You have to make sure you get all the metal out. You have to make sure that the only thing you have left is the plastic part. And then you can epoxy the leaves into pre-drilled holes and instant fake plant. And here's... should be a picture of it coming up. Yeah. On the left there, you can see the 2-meter J-pole with an ivy garland on it. That's another way to do it, is to just buy one of those garlands and run it on it. And on the right is my current 30-meter dipole, and you can see the foliage in the middle. It doesn't seem to affect it. Another way to hide antenna parts is in a birdhouse. So here you go buy a birdhouse, but look inside, and you will find a ballon with the coaxial cable running up the mast for the birdhouse. And if you use a 4-to-1 ballon, you can do an off-center fed dipole, or a 1-to-1 ballon, and you can do a regular tuned dipole. And here's in the back where the, quote, guy wires, unquote, go. And that's where your antenna pieces will go. And if it's up high enough, you may need a guy wire. So that's perfectly acceptable. In some neighborhoods, your birdhouse may be acceptable. So how about a trellis antenna? So here's another, this is another shot of the same thing. This is a 40-meter antenna. 40-meter dipole, 10 feet off the ground. My first contact with it was South Africa on sideband, so it worked pretty well. But if you can have a trellis above a fence or concrete block wall, that would be a great idea to put that up. Array Solutions has a really cool flagpole antenna because this particular one is center-fed, so you don't need a big ground plane. If you already have the house built and everything, then this will work pretty well because it's center-fed. And so you don't need the ground radials. And it has a bunch of different sizes. And this is a little diagram on how it works. You need a tuner at the base with a 1-to-1 ballon and a tuner. And then there's a ladder line that goes up inside of the flagpole antenna. And the feed point is in the middle. So that's how it's fed. So you don't need a fancy ground plane. If you have aluminum downspouts, or metal downspouts, you can connect those up to wire. You do need a fairly decent ground for this. And if you're using plastic grounds downspouts, then you just need to run a wire on the inside, like a number 12 regular house wire on the inside. Loop antennas are a little smaller, and they don't need to be very high off the ground. They only need to be about 5 feet off the ground. And this is an MFJ model that'll do 100 watts, and they'll go down to 40 meters. So that's another option. And this is a bigger loop antenna. This one will handle a lot more power. This is one a friend of mine here built. It's a couple miles away. And this is a loop antenna using a gamma match. And this one is good for 60 meters, but it also works on 80 and 40. So he made it for 80 and 40 meters and had it in his backyard. There's a dimension. So an 80-meter loop antenna, 8.7 feet in diameter. He wanted about a tenth of a wavelength long. 40-meter antenna, 4.4 feet in diameter. So, and it's made out of that quarter-inch refrigerator tubing. Or it's a tubing you use to hook up your ice maker to the water supply in your refrigerator. It's relatively available stuff. Here's temporary antennas. There are two things you can do here. One is you can put all kinds of antennas on your car. You back your car out of the driveway. You connect up a coaxial cable to your bumper-mounted antenna or whatever. You go run your cable inside and use your car antenna. And when you're all done, put it all away and put your car back in the garage. Or you can put one of these antennas, a freestanding antenna, in a 5-gallon bucket and drag it out in the backyard and use it. And then when you're done, put it back under the patio or next to the house or something and nobody will know. This is another unusual thing. The same guy who did that loop antenna also made a 160-meter end-fed vertical dipole. He used balloons to hold it up. And it was 270 feet long. And he had three balloons on it. And he, of course, 160 meters is only a nighttime band. So he ran it up at night. And he was able to work a 160-meter contest in the middle of the night with this. And since you use a 50-to-1 transformer, you got a couple thousand ohm feed point at the very end of this antenna. So you don't need much of a ground. You need a ground, but it doesn't have to be a very low impedance ground. And this worked really well. So anyway, suggest to make up for a low antenna gain, especially on the higher frequency bands, is run lots of power to overcome the lower antenna gain. And but wire antennas, however, like for 80, 40, and 160, if you have the room to put them up, they work about the same as wire antennas that somebody has who's not in an antenna restricted area. And also be careful there because almost any wire antenna will handle like 100 watts. But 1,500 watts, you have to maybe beef up your your wires a little bit if you're going to run really high power. And one thing you really need, the one in the lower left there is the one that I have, which I got when I started experimenting around with stealth antennas, because I needed to know what the impedance was, how to tune it, and how to match it and everything else. But now that Rig Expert would be much better, because you can take that's handheld. I had to run inside the house, run a test, go back out, tune it, run back in, run another test. But that the handheld ones that are out now are really good. And you'll probably need an antenna tuner. The manual antenna tuner on the right, there's an automatic antenna tuner on the left, and then the one on the left is the one that I have. It'll handle it's been going for 2 years now. I got it at the DX convention a couple of years ago. It's worked fine for the past couple of years because some of my lower frequency antennas require an antenna tuner, but you have to have a pretty clean signal to go into it because they're high pass filters. So you need to, whatever amplifier or rig you're using has to have a pretty clean signal on the output, because the antenna tuner will just pass everything around. But be safe and make sure that the ends of the antenna, nobody can get to the ends of the antenna, because you can have a lot of voltage on there. And don't let the CCNRs keep you off the air. And just be innovative, careful, and you can get on the air on HF with all kinds of different antennas, hidden antennas, stealth antennas. You can car antennas, whatever. So there are lots of different ways to do it, but you just have to think a little bit differently than the conventional antennas, and you can get on the air.
Oh, that's great, Carl. Carl, where may folks send you an email with any questions or comments?
I have a reflector on the ARRL, so you can go KB7AZ at ARRL.net, and that'll get to me. That's the easiest way to do it.
Well, thank you, Carl. Let me tell you, great audio on that, Mike. A great rundown of secret stealth antennas. And I so much appreciate you being with us. And we're probably going to ask you to come back and even do more shortly. Okay?
Okay. I'll be
right
here.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Carl, for joining us on Ham Nation and pulling together this great program. He started out with a lot more slides, but our time constraints give us the very best. So, Carl, Barry 73. And now let's check up and see what's happening with ICOM America.
Create your own band opening with the IC9700. ICOM's newest SDR transceiver, the IC9700, is coming soon. This new radio is bringing direct sampling to the UHF-VHF weak signal world. The IC9700 all-mode transceiver is loaded with innovative features, such as dedicated amateur satellite operation, color touchscreen, built-in D-Star capability, RF direct sampling on 2 meters and 70 centimeter bands, dual independent receivers capable of full duplex operation as well as dual watch, 100 watts maximum output power on 2 meters, 75 watts max on 70 centimeters, and 10 watts max on 1.2 gigahertz. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
Attention all hams!
ICOM knows that ham clubs play a big role in bringing ham communities together to learn from their peers and industry leaders. As a way to give back and help you on your mission, ICOM has launched a promotion exclusively for U.S. ham clubs and the ham fest they're involved with. By registering your club, you could win ICOM swag, a Skype presentation for your club, or your ham fest, an ICOM booth setup. Register today for your chance to win at ICOMAmerica.com/hams. Pack your bags, because Dayton Hamvention is coming up from May 17th through 19th at the Greene County Fairgrounds and Expo Center in Xenia, Ohio. See the latest and greatest ICOM gear and meet hams from all over the world. ICOM invites you to enter the weekly contest for some great swag prizes like t-shirts and hats at ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. You'll also be registered for the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For April, that new radio is the ID5100A Deluxe, innovative 2-meter 70-centimeter mobile with touchscreen, D-Star and analog, built-in GPS,
DVDV dual watch, optional Bluetooth board, and there's downloadable Bluetooth and Android apps available. Visit iComAmerica.com/HamNation after this and each episode of Ham Nation. Register to win, and good luck. Randy wants to know what you've been soldering, building, wrenching, or drilling. He's collecting photos and descriptions, no videos, please, of your projects. Send them to hamprojects@twit.tv, and you could be in the next Show Us Your Projects. Now, next week on Ham Nation, I've got something here we're going to look at. When's the last time you looked in an ARRL repeater directory? Well, I've got the new 2019 version here. We're going to open it up and see what might have changed in there since the last time you looked at one. Now, Friday night, I'm going to be doing an amateur logic, and I'm going to shoot you through some of the shortcuts that you can use and tips to successfully set up the MFJ Octopus antenna, and probably some hints that you could use when you're doing, say, buddy pole type antennas. So join me at live.amateurlogic.tv Friday at 8 Central and take a look at that. And now here's Don.
All right. Thanks, George. Man, we got a good show tonight. Let's go ahead and get into the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline, and then we'll hear from Dr. T in the Solar Update. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2162, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. We begin this week's report with news of an event that pays tribute to radio officers who serve as a lifeline to ships at sea. This is a worldwide activity, and organizers are looking to expand participation this year.
It started with five amateur radio operators, Alfredo, IK6IJF, Rolf, DL9CM, Giuliano, I1SAF, Olivier, F6DGU, and David, G3PLE. Now, a decade later, it has grown into a favourite tribute on the global radio calendar. It is the International Maritime Radio Day, and it operates to honour radio officers through the years, those who provided wireless communication services to vessels at sea. This year, it is taking place from 1200 UTC, Sunday the 14th of April, until 2200 UTC on Monday the 15th of April. All former radio officers who have an amateur radio licence are encouraged to get on the air and be part of the event. Organisers write on their website that they are particularly interested in attracting new participants, especially from the United States and parts of the Far East. All communications will, of course, be conducted in Morse code on amateur radio bands closest to the international naval frequencies. To register, see this newscast script at arnewsline.org, where the website URL is given. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ed Durant, DD5LP.
The search for a missing amateur radio operator in Pennsylvania ended recently with the discovery of his body.
An amateur radio operator who had been the focus of a missing persons alert has become a silent key. According to news reports, the body of Carl Messerschmidt, KA3RCS, of Myerstown, Pennsylvania, was found on Saturday, March 30th in the Middle Creek Wildlife Area. The local coroner said that two hikers found the radio operator's body and that he had died of a single gunshot wound, believed to be a suicide. His body was found at the conclusion of a search that had begun after the man's Jeep had been found parked and unattended. Authorities mobilized horse-mounted, ATV, and on-foot search teams, drones, logistic teams, and the state police. According to the profile on his QRZ page, Carl had a keen interest in DXing, rag-chewing, and AM operations. He was also rediscovering Morse code and had a burgeoning interest in summits on the air. Carl Messerschmidt was 46. He had been a licensed ham since the age of 14. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
A ham radio operator captured the saga of a ship in distress off the coast of Norway and shared it with the media.
The dramatic distress call of a Norwegian cruise ship stranded in storm-tossed weather in late March was captured and recorded by a ham radio operator in Norway. The Viking Sky had 1,373 passengers and crew on board when it was crippled by power loss, engine failure, and hazardous weather whilst off the Norwegian coast. Reports in Norwegian media indicated wind gusts of 43 miles an hour and wave heights exceeding 26 feet or 8 meters. According to a report in the USA Today newspaper, the ship had to drop anchor in order to avoid being dashed on the rocks. Broadcasters in Norway and Sweden reported that a radio amateur had intercepted the communications. They had been provided with his recording, but they did not state his identity. The ship, which sailed from Tromsø in northern Norway, had been engine bound for southern Norway in bad weather when the engine failed and the vessel listed taking on water. More than 10 hours of helicopter air evacuations took 464 passengers off the ship, but once the engines were able to be restarted, it was able to continue its journey to a Norwegian port. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Bucci for NJH.
We're at the halfway point of the nominating period for the Newsline WA6ITF Young Ham of the Year Award. Full details and the nominating form can be found on our website, arnewsline.org, under the YHOTY tab. Nominations close May 31st at midnight Eastern Time, and we'll present the award in August at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Alabama. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Ed Durant, DD5LP, Heather Emby, KB3TZD, Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
An old region rotates back into Earth view after surviving its backside passage, and it's the brightest thing on the sun. How will it affect you? That story and more in the news this week. Space weather this week continues to be a bit unsettled. As we switch to our front side sun, you can see a coronal hole that rotated through the Earth strike zone. It had bumped us up to active conditions a few times this week and even brought us some aurora at high latitudes. But that's not the big story. The big story is the bright region 2738 that is rotating into Earth view. This is a returning sunspot and it is massive. As we switch to our stereo view, which is looking at the sun pretty much from the side, you can see that huge sunspot there. It's the only thing that draws your eye. And believe it or not, it is still firing low C-class flares and a few solar storms. It even fired one near Mars the other day. So this region is still a very active region, and we are watching it as it continues to boost the solar flux up for emergency responders. We're back into marginal radio propagation on Earth's day side, and it looks like these conditions are going to continue easily over the next week. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we've been dealing with pretty much unsettled conditions and things will continue to stay that way. We do have a chance for a small pocket of fast solar wind to hit us right around the 12th and the 13th, but don't expect all that much from it. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting unsettled conditions to active conditions with up to about a 30% chance of a minor storm and even a skosh of a major storm around the 12th. But at mid-latitudes, we're expecting unsettled conditions and maybe up to about a 25% chance of active conditions. But again, aurora photographers, don't expect there to be much here. It's not going to be a very large storm. And then things will continue to settle down as we move through the weekend. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, old region 2736 has survived its backside passage and now is back in Earth view, and it is still active. It's been firing solar flares on the backside as well as the front side, even a solar storm here or two, but not very large ones. So everything is in the green when it comes to big solar flares. We don't have any risk for radio blackouts, so your GPS operator should be very happy. But this is a huge region on the Earth-facing disk right now, and it has boosted that solar flux. We're back up into the high 70s for solar flux, which means marginal radio propagation again on Earth's day side. This is good news for you amateur shortwave and emergency responders. You guys should be loving life easily over the next few days, probably even over the next week or more before this region begins to kind of die down and rotate back around the backside and solar flux begins to tank once again. Now, also because we are near solar minimum, we do have a higher cosmic ray impingement than we normally would have. So all of you frequent flyers, and this does include you air crew who fly over 800 hours annually and fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are in the marginal range for radiation dose. And this does include prenatal passengers. So please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week remains a bit unsettled. We do have a chance for a small pocket of fast wind to hit us around the 12th and 13th, and this could boost the aurora chances at high latitudes for a very short while, but most likely things will remain pretty much unsettled for this week. Now, the good news is we have old region 2736 that's been renumbered 2738 that has rotated back into Earth view, and it has boosted the solar flux back up into the balmy high 70s. So amateur radio and shortwave radio, as well as emergency responders, enjoy some decent radio propagation on Earth's day side easily over the next week or so, possibly a little bit longer before this region rotate back to the sun's backside. Now, also, you GPS users, well, you know, GPS reception should be looking pretty good. We don't have any really big solar flares to worry about, so no radio blackouts. And we also don't have any big solar storms, so not that much aurora either. So your reception all over the globe should look pretty nice. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
And of course, you need to follow Dr. T on Twitter. If you're not following her on Twitter, you're really doing yourself a disservice, because the stuff that you see here on Ham Nation every week is just a tiny sliver of the stuff that she posts, and she's constantly posting. And so follow her at Tamitha Scove on Twitter, and there you go. And if the sunspots aren't cooperating, you can make your own little band opening. And the best way to do that is by getting your stuff at DX Engineering. And as hams know, radio frequency interference, or RFI, is horrible. A lot of times it's caused by a neighbor's noisy electronic devices or equipment. Even in your own home can bring you major operating headaches. Those little wall warts, the CFL, the little LED lights and stuff, even your washing machine, nasty, 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 can give you major headaches. But not to worry, because DX Engineering offers products and resources to combat that RFI. For instance, the DX Engineering Ferrite RF Noise Reduction Kits feature toroids and bead chokes made from mixes of ferrite, proven to block and dissipate RF currents. You attach that to your cable or wire, the ferrite chokes suppress the RFI in specific applications such as linear amplifiers, base stations, AM broadcast, AC-DC generators. Kits also come in combinations of ferrite mixes, sizes, and types for a range of uses. The chokes are color-coded, so you can conveniently identify a mix 31 toroid from a mix 75 at a glance. DX Engineering's patent-pending ISOPLUS Ethernet RF filter is a simple way to suppress RFI to and from Ethernet cables used between PCs, printers, transceivers, and other devices. Those things are so noisy, you'd be amazed. The ISOPLUS is an inline filter. It joins two RJ45 connectors together to fight common mode RFI and EMI noise interference from well below 1 megahertz to over 100 megahertz. The interference is a common problem on Ethernet Cat 5 and Cat 6 cables. The result is reduced or eliminated EMI or RFI caused by power supplies, wall power adapters, appliances, just about anything else near the RJ45 cables. The ISOPLUS is available in sets from two filters all the way up to 10 filters. And, of course, just buy as many as you need. And DX Engineering proudly carries leading reference books on RFI and grounding from the ARRL. For instance, the ARRL's Grounding and Bonding for the Radio Amateur by Ward Silver. This guy's a genius. It covers RF management, AC safety, lightning protection, a host of other topics, too. The third generation of ARRL's RFI book addresses the causes and cures of many interference problems, from televisions to automotive-related RFI. And the ARRL's handy RFI pocket guide gives you essential data on RFI for advanced ham radio operators and technicians. DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern time are shipped the same day. Proven products and expert advice. DX Engineering is helping you shrink the globe. So request your catalog or shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. Man, they have the best people over there at DX Engineering, and we thank them, DX Engineering, for their support of Ham Nation. And one of those great people is the guy who's in charge, and that is Tim Duffy, K3LR, and he's out at the Twit Studios, and he's got some Yahoo from ICOM.
Hey, Don, thanks very much, and it's great to be back here. Both Ray and I are in town for the Visalia International DX Convention, which will happen this weekend, just a few hundred miles south of here in Visalia, California. So, and we've been coming up here to the Twit Studios for several years now.
Yeah, I think maybe a fourth or fifth time that we've been out here together.
Right. Right. But tonight, as we've done in past years, we're going to talk about Contest University that happens just before Hamvention in downtown Dayton, Ohio. It's a Thursday before. And boy, we have some exciting news this year, Ray. We've got a great lineup of professors. We've got some older professors that have been with us for a long time, but we've got some exciting new professors as well. So I think you're really going to enjoy Contest University this year. We're on track to break our attendance record of over 350
again
to attend. Oh yeah, no, we are on track to have more students than we've ever had before. And so go ahead, Victor, with the slides, and you can find out more information about Contest University at contestuniversity.com. Here is a list of all of the professors that are at Contest University this year. And you see on there Rob Sherwood, who is the industry-leading expert when it comes to receivers and transmitters, for that matter. He gives an excellent presentation at the end of Contest University for 1 hour talking about the latest radios. And I know he's got an IC9700 because we shipped it to him, and he will have some late-breaking analysis on the performance of that radio. Our very own Dr. Tamitha Scove will be there. We're very excited to have Joel Harrison once again. Joel is a former ARRL president. Randy Thompson, who is an integral part of the CQ Worldwide contest team. Bob Wilson, who gives great support on many logging programs and radios. W3YQ, an industry-leading expert when it comes to tower safety. Ward Silver, author of the ARRL Handbook, author of the ARRL Antenna Book, and we could go on and on. Doug Grant, another guy who has got tremendous experience when it comes to building stations, and our youngest ever professor.
He's not old enough to be a professor.
He is old enough. And his presentation, Ray, is out of this world. KG5HVO is a professor. Chris Harbert, KL9A, and Dan Craig, N6MJ. Chris and Dan were the gold medal winners at WRTC in 2014, and they are giving tremendous presentations. And Frank Donovan, W3LPL, who has been giving just over 100 presentations at Contest University, we're giving him a year off, much deserved year off.
But I want to go back. Brian is how old again?
All right, I'll get to that. All right.
Reason why is because Dan and Chris used to be the kids at K3LR.
Well, no longer. All right. Let's go ahead, Victor. So here are the sessions.
Something else real quick about Bryant. Bryant is the reigning Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year.
Stay tuned, Don. Don't spoil this. Okay,
I'm sorry.
All right.
Go ahead.
Don't spoil this. So there's a tab that you can see what's going on at Contest University, and here are all the titles to all of the presentations. So go to the website to see, and here's Dan Craig, N6MJ. Now notice that he's got his hands on two radios, but he's listening to three radios all at the same time, and he'll be giving a great presentation on how to use two radios and even three radios all at the same time at Contest University. Next. And here's Chris, KL9A. He lives in Montana. And here he is at the shack of TI5W down in Costa Rica. And he's going to talk about remote contesting, which is a really popular, innovative way to operate without having to be at the station itself. So really excited to have Chris and Dan. Next slide. And our youngest. So this was the first time that Bryant had communicated with me. He was 12 years old, and he had a QSO with K3LR during the CQ Worldwide DX CW contest. So here he is, 12 years old. He didn't have to pass a code test to get his license, but he made a QSO with K3LR using the stock microphone of his radio. He was using the push-to-down
buttons.
He would no. Read what it says there. He's using the push-to-talk switch as a CW key. So he didn't have a key, and he was sort of slow at sending, but he worked over 50 guys with a PTT switch. So all of us at DX Engineering got a little pool going, and we bought him a key, a Bencher key, and we sent it to him as a surprise. Now, his mom got that box in the mail, and she says, who ordered something from DX Engineering? She was flabbergasted, thought that Bryant had gone off on a
buying spree, got the credit card.
Spree.
12 years old?
Yes. So, and this was in December. So Brian's mom, Lauren, wrapped it up and put it underneath the Christmas tree, and that was one of the gifts that Bryant got. So here's Bryant 6 months later, first time he comes to Dayton. And here he is at the contest dinner, and it was the first time I got to meet him. He attended Contest University. And so then you fast forward another year, and it's 2018. Here's Bryant in Germany competing at the WRTC 2018 with his teammate, Matthias, CE2LR from Chile. What a great thing that is. And here's Bryant during the contest at WRTC, come light years in only 2 years' time. He's 14 years old, and he's on one of the biggest stages. So this is in July. He comes home, and what happens? He's the 2018 Bill Pasternak Young Ham of the Year. So it just goes on and on and on. And now he comes back to Contest University, and he will be a 2019 professor at CTU in Dayton.
But didn't he just do something like last weekend or weekend before last?
Yeah, 2 weekends ago, he was part of Team Exuberance, and where they made over 6,000 QSOs from K3LR and the WPX phone contest. So his resume is quickly building, and I can't imagine what's in store for young Bryant as he continues to grow up. I mean, he's barely in high school.
And it's incredible to see that passion that he has. I mean, you and I sit here and talk, and we even hear Don get excited to talk about Bryant. But what this young man has done in such a short period of time, I'd love to see more kids get involved in a hobby like that.
Well, stay tuned. I think you're going to see a lot of exciting things. So here's what Contest University looks like. Just a tremendous day of learning, 8 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night. And we have lots of information on station building, how to get the most out of your vertical antennas, your dipole antennas. It's really geared towards beginners and medium level. So it is a great opportunity, even if you're not involved in contesting, but to learn how radio works and how to put together a station. It's a tremendous opportunity to gain a lot of knowledge very quickly. And we have great participation from the audience, from the students, as well as a tremendous lineup of instructors, professors that bring hundreds of years worth of experience to share. And we have great textbooks. The 2019 textbook is just finishing up. Terry Cade, MNJ, oversees all the assembly of this stuff. And this year's textbook is really something special. Like I said, lots of great information from a lot of talented people that have volunteered to help make Contest University what it is. And we have scholarships. Anybody under the age of 25 can attend Contest University, courtesy of the Northern California DX Foundation, who has worked very closely with CTU over the years, as well as YASME. And we couldn't do it without our sponsor, ICOM. Ray has been with us ever since we started this 13 years ago. And Michael Coulter, WHCI, who's the CFO of the Hamvention, comes and opens up Contest University every year. And you can learn how to build a station. Here's a station I just recently built for WRTC in Germany, and you can have a good time. That's Sandy, my teammate from WRTC, DL1QQ, and we put the station together. And all these station building techniques are talked about at CTU. A lot of youth-oriented topics as well at CTU. Bryant will be talking about some of them. There'll be other presentations. And the young lady in this, this was some of the youth that operated at WRTC 2018. And the young lady is ZL4YL from New Zealand. Her name is Xenia. And Ray, this year, Xenia is coming to Xenia. And so Xenia and her father and mother will be traveling to Xenia, Ohio this year to attend Hamvention. In the evenings, a great place to hang out is at the Contest Super Suite at the Crown Plaza. You can find more information and schedule of events at ContestSuperSuite, all one word, .com. And every night there's a free pizza party. You can't beat it. Ham Nation will be live on Wednesday night from the Crown Plaza. And on Friday night, we have the Top Band Dinner. It's the 30th annual. And Ken, K4ZW, is the featured speaker. Saturday night is the granddaddy of them all, the Contest Dinner, 27th annual. And our featured speaker is noted contester and 5G wireless expert, Dr. Ted Rappaport, N9NB, talking about his exciting life and what amateur radio has done for his career. So here are the websites for Contest University, Contest Super Suite, Contest Dinner, Top Band Dinner, and Hamvention. These are the sites that will get you hooked up. Next slide. And here are just some of the faces from DX Engineering. That's Terry Kate MNJ, who really does all of the heavy lifting and organizing of the events. Our national sales manager is Bob W5OV and Corey W3CDG, who runs our manufacturing, and Ed Kate IV, who is head of our technical department. So lots of smiling faces. And oh, there's Mel, KSU, who's in the chat room every week as well. So we hope to see you at Dayton, Ohio for CTU and some of the activities, and Ham Nation on Wednesday night. I know Ray will be there.
And you forgot one important fact.
What's that?
For those that can't make it to Contest University because you guys have sold out, it'll be live streamed.
It'll be live streamed courtesy of ICOM. So looking forward to that. You've done that for many years. And those live streams get recorded. Yep. So they're available on YouTube, again, courtesy of ICOM. And thank you, Ray, for everything you do to make Contest University a real event, real special for everybody that shows up.
It's wonderful. I've been watching all the way through it. And, of course, you guys at DX Engineering, you put a whole year into this thing. I know. It's really amazing, all of the little things you have to do, and they become giant things at the end of the year because there are so many that learn from it. I hear about it quite often that they learn things. And these are not contesters. I know a number of my friends go there just to learn how to do things. So thank goodness it's there and that we need more of this. So thanks for doing all of that. And I guess we'll see you on Wednesday night there, and hoping that we'll be able to get a nice hookup and bring Ham Nation to the country on good old Twit Network. So thanks to Leo Laporte for letting us do that. So that'll be great. And thanks so much for bringing all of it to here together here. Do you have anything more? You guys, you got all the information out that you need, Tim?
I think so, Bob. I think Ray filled it in good.
I believe so. I mean, I just showed up here before going down to Visalia, so we really didn't have a script to work from tonight.
But, you know, I think we've done pretty well. And, we're you know, if anybody has any questions, they can always email K3LR at K3LR.com, and I'll get back to you. And, you know, we really want people to have fun, not only at Dayton and at the Hamvention, but you can have fun online, too, by watching the live stream and looking at the recordings from past years. And all of the slide decks for the past years are up on the Contest University website as well. So there's just a whole load of information that's free. You can go there, get it, and come up to speed very fast.
I know myself personally, all right, I'm going to enjoy watching N6MJ's video about doing SO3R.
There you go.
When he told me that he was doing it, he had two 7850s or two 7851s, and then had a 7300 as a third receiver. And watching him, I mean, it's like a mutant copying CW.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun, and we're all going to learn something. So looking forward to it, Bob. We'll see you on Wednesday night for Ham Nation at the Crown Plaza.
Sorry I couldn't be there this weekend. I would love to be there because we missed playing that organ concert across the street. But I am headed for Oklahoma, and a wonderful bunch of guys down there in Claremore. And it's always a problem for me because it's the same weekend. And I usually have been going out there. I thought, oh, I better go see my friends in Oklahoma. Oklahoma this weekend. So you guys hold down there. We'll be down in Oklahoma. And you know, Trent, that's the first time I met you. Remember that? How many years ago that was? But it was in Claremore that we met. So going to go down and see what's going on. Well, speaking of going on, let's go out to Colorado and see what's going on with Miss Amanda. How are you, Amanda? You, Jeff, doing well?
We are doing well, and we missed the blizzard. There was another bomb cyclone headed this way in Colorado, and it missed us. So we're doing excellent. Let's see. I do have one announcement. This is pretty interesting. I've never heard of anybody making any International Space Station contacts from Colorado before, but there's going to be one next week from Park County Schools. And that's a county right next to me. And I really wish I could go join them and watch these STEAM students make this contact. But they get a 10-minute window on April 15th. And they applied a long, long time ago. And they finally got accepted. So it's the Fair Play School. And their science, technology, engineering, arts, and math program has been teaching about 200 students there about ham radio and other frequencies, and they're really excited to be able to talk to our American astronaut there, Nick Hague, I think is how you pronounce his last name, but I'm so excited for them. So if you're in the area, you can stop by and check it out. All right. With that, let's go to some questions. Ray, this one's going to be for you. Last week, we had in the chat room a question about what's the difference between the 7850, the 7851, and the gold edition. So do you want to explain that to us?
Yes, ma'am. Be glad to. The 7850 was a celebration of the 50th anniversary of ICOM. There was only 150 of them made, and they had the high gloss black finish to them, gold accent, a special log-on screen, and on the very top of the box is a commemorative plate with Mr. Inouye, the founder of ICOM's signature. So that's really the only difference of the cosmetics between the two, and to hear everybody fighting over those 150 radios was unbelievable.
Did it go to the highest bidder? No.
No. It went. We allocated so many per country, and it was first come, first serve basis.
Very good. Well, seeing pictures of them, they look amazing. The second thing I had to ask you is, okay, we all know that the 9700 is coming out. When are you and George and Tommy going to do an epic video on it? Come on, tell us all.
Well, is George still there?
I don't think George is on.
I don't think so.
Okay. He's going. Looks like I'm going to be going down April the 22nd. Tommy and George both are going to be there with me, so there might be a little bit of a scuffle for me to leave with that radio. we really haven't discussed whether we're going to do it as a live stream or if we're just going to fly through it and record it, because there's quite a few things that we've got to cover with that radio.
Oh, sure. I think a live, I don't think you could do it live, but definitely recording you guys making some satellite contacts would be really cool. That's just my opinion. You out there holding the antenna and they're working the radio and messing it up for you. I think that would be funny.
Yeah, holding the antennas going in both directions, trying to make them all work.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Tommy giving commentary in the background about how it's not working or something. You know how those two guys work. It'd be fun. All right, Bob, this is a serious question for you. Don, WB3BJU says, QST had an article on the 20-meter 3/8 wave vertical antenna. Hopefully you've seen that article. Have you?
I've saw it, but I haven't studied it, so I'm not sure what the question will be.
Well, we'll see. It used a 4-to-1 Balun with series capacitor, and he says he wants to try a 40-meter vertical. Would 50 PF be enough series capacitance?
I don't think so. What do you think, Tim? I don't think that's enough for 40 meters. What do you think, Tim?
Well, it doesn't sound like it's enough. I agree with you, Bob. You know, I don't know if he's talking about a quarter wave vertical or a 3/8 wave vertical on 40, but if you take the 20 meter capacitance number that was in the QST article and double it, you're going to be pretty safe that would, you know, you can basically just double the dimensions within a few inches. You want to use one of those antenna analyzers that was talked about earlier tonight. And if you double the capacitor as well, you're probably going to be pretty close. But and if he has any other questions, I'm sure that either the author of the article would help him, or I'd be very available to help as well.
Great. Well, thank you guys.
If you have an analyzer, like I say so many times, put it together and try it. You're not going to blow anything up. The key is you need an analyzer no matter what. So that's what I would do with it. So there's our answer, Amanda.
Great. Now, my final comments are for Carl. Carl, thank you so much for your presentation tonight. I think a lot of us enjoyed it. In fact, while you were doing it, I texted one of my friends who lives in an apartment and said, you have to watch Ham Nation from this episode this week because this is amazing. And my ultimate favorite was the birdhouse. I've never seen anything cuter than that. But a lot of people on chat were asking if they could find your whole presentation somewhere online.
Yes, the whole presentation, I don't know exactly where to find it, but if you go to the Oro Valley Amateur Radio Club, the OVARC, Oro Valley, which is TucsonHamRadio.org, just all one word, TucsonHamRadio.org, and go into the meetings tab, it should be there in the meetings, and I gave that presentation, I believe, in November of last year. So that presentation is on there, and it's about 80 to 90 slides. And when I do it in person, I also have a bunch of props. I have a lot of things I had pictures of, and I actually bring it in, like the birdhouse and the J-pole with the garland on it. And I have three or four different garlands I can put on. Some have flowers and some don't. So anyway. But the presentation, the whole slide deck is there on TucsonHamRadio.org in the meeting section.
Great. Now, my other question for you is, excuse me, what was your most successful hidden antenna? Which one worked the best for you? It seemed like you tried all of them out. So
that 20-meter ground plane that was elevated about 18 inches off the ground, I had that in the side yard. Nobody ever found it. The bottom part of it is made with a half-inch copper pipe, and the upper part of it is the that 108-inch whip that was painted sky blue. And the radials were made out of a half-inch EMT conduit. And that antenna outperformed all kinds of antennas. It really did well. I did a contest with it. Didn't do that well because I was also very new to contesting at the time. But that antenna really performed. So, and it was just a straight ground plane made with that round electrical box and four conduits. And I had to extend it because the radials for 20 meters are longer than the 10-foot conduit. So you have to add some length to the conduit to tune the radials. But that thing was the best.
Well, that's great. And another thing, so you have brought up trying all of these antennas. Did you ever get busted with any of them?
No. Before I moved, the neighbor found one antenna. I had a green dipole. It was a 80-meter, 20-meter trap dipole, I believe. And they found that one, but they didn't find any of the other antennas. So I was pretty successful at getting those hidden. I had about 12 or 13 antennas up, and nobody found them except for that one. But the neighbors didn't care, so because they had no windows on that side of the house.
Yeah. Well, you know, you always put up those decoy antennas, you know, so then they think you've taken everything down and that you're no longer doing what you're doing, and you keep the hidden ones there. So, Carl, it was an excellent presentation. We really appreciate it. Wish we could have watched it in whole, and thanks for giving us where we could find it. And like Gordo said, I think you'll be back again to show us some new secrets.
Okay. I'll be here.
Great. I'm going to go over a couple nets here, and then I'll let Bob wrap it up for tonight. First of all, we have the 40-meter net on 7192. Not great propagation, so I wouldn't have high hopes for that one. Steve, W7UDI, he's being brave tonight, y'all. He's going to try 20 meters. So he's on 14268. Give him a shot. And then we have our digital nets. We have TAC 311 for DMR, and then D-Star on 14 Charlie. Ray, I expect to hear you on there. I know you brought a radio with you. Other than that, back to you, Bob.
All right. Very good. Well, speaking of antennas, I had an incredible thing happen this week. I'm always messing around when I can get some time. I took one of my coaxial dipoles down to put some new messenger line on, and I pulled it up to, about 15 feet. I just wanted to make sure everything was okay. I came in the house, and I didn't think about it. I turned the radio on, and, man, there were a lot of signals on 40 meters. I thought, whoa. And I had a run of about, there must have been at least 30 stations, which gets kind of crazy when I get on. And I love talking to the people. But one of them was in Italy. And, I don't have his call, but he's well-known on 40 meters. And I was 10 over
Roberto.
9 in Italy. Yeah, Roberto, yes, that's the guy. I was 10 over 9 at Roberto's place. And when I got finished, it finally dawned upon me that antenna, which is still hanging out here, is about 15. Well, not even that. I can almost jump up and touch it. So much for having real big antennas. And, of course, there again, I wasn't the biggest signal on the band. But think about it. And like I say all the time, just put it up and try it. You will be amazed. I was amazed when I figured what I was doing. What a dummy. But it's one of those things. You just have to do it. Have fun. That's the main thing. It's amateur radio. That's why they call it amateur. Thanks for being here. We had a really good show tonight. I hope you were taking notes. You had to do that. If not, go back and watch the replay. So thanks very much for being here. Thanks to all the hosts and the guests to help bring all this great information to us. And we'll see you in Claremore personally. I'll be there. The other fellows will be out at Visalia. So great, great information tonight. Thanks so much. We'll be back here next week. Same place, same time, and all that good stuff. And in the meantime, I keep the tubes warm, or maybe transistor. Well, it depends if you got some of this stuff. All right. So long, everybody. 7-3. This is K9EID. Bye-bye.